him. First to introduce His Holiness Ajahn Chah. Maharaj has dedicated his life to the holy name and serving Srila Prabhupada since the age of 15. He's well known for his deep japa retreats and all over the world, as well as his very warm smile. Fortunately for us, Maharaj has been spending a lot of time with Pandrasena, with last year's retreat and the mentorship retreat and a lot of japa retreats, and has become a part of Pandrasena. So, could we have three loud very words for such another song? At the age of 18, Madhura Prabhu joined the Vrindavan Mandali and is a very close associate of His Grace Ayendra Prabhu. Ayendra Prabhu gave Madhura Prabhu one instruction, which was wherever he goes, please distribute the holy name. And as we can all see and have heard his amazing kirtans, he has taken this instruction and dedicated his life to it. We have very much the one
Madhava Prabhu. Astakyare Shatarine. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinavandhu Jagarpade. Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari. Vrishabhanusuti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudevi Gaura Vrinda Panchakalpa Tadru Vaishya Kripa Sindhu Vaiva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna Hare
order. He said, you speak about the Trinadavi verse, then I will correct you. Then both of us will be available for questions and answers.
Both of us will start to fight.
Hare Krishna. You should know one thing about our affectionate relationship. We spend very, very good quality time together preaching Prabhupada's mission in the early times of ISKCON Germany, ISKCON Austria, and we also went to Sweden together, and we have experienced the tremendous, let us say, pleasure or bliss of working together in the active preaching field, and therefore he has always been my older brother, and I have always seen myself as the uncivilized person from the West. Only the time we learned something. So you will find our affectionate relationship. I might express myself, and you know from where this comes. Good. So today is a very, very dear verse to all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I would love to chant this together with all of you. Let me just get my papers. You will find the verse on the blackboard. Kindly join us.
Trinadapi sunichena,
Trinadapi sunichena,
Taro iva sahishnuna,
Taro
Trinadapi sunichena,
Trinadapi sunichena,
Karorapi sahishnuna,
Karorapi sahishnuna,
Amanina manadena,
Amanina manadena,
Kirtaniya sadahari,
Kirtaniya sadahari.
Trinadapi sunichena,
Amanina manadena,
Amanina manadena,
Shaya, Shaya, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. In this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offers us a deep insight into the qualifications which are necessary to develop both for chanting the taste and also for our general life. It's a verse which in ISKCON is always referred to as the humility verse. When you enter a temple and speak with those who practice the path of Krishna consciousness, and you mention that humility verse, everyone goes and nods his head, yes, Trinadapi. It is a very, very well-known verse because it spells out very, very clearly four powerful keys to develop in our spiritual life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here talks for the second time on humility. We are left to ask ourselves, why, if the Lord only spoke 8 verses, he repeats himself on the subject matter of humility? Yesterday, His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj explained to you the second verse, where the Lord expresses one type of humility. Today we hear the Lord again expressing the need for humility, and he will talk about a second type of humility. And I request you to now listen very attentively, because I'm sure that you will learn something which, if you understand it, will make you enrich your life. On the first time in the verse number 2, when Mahaprabhu speaks on humility, he speaks on humility based on remorse. In this verse, Mahaprabhu contrasts the mercy of the Lord, who has liberally given his holy name and invested so much energy into the holy name, with his own fallen state. Mahaprabhu says, although you have invested all your transcendental energies in the name, and there are not even hard and fast rules for sharing these three names, and you have been so kind to enable us thus to easily approach you, I, on the other hand, am so unfortunate that I don't like it. I don't like chanting. I have no attraction to the holy name. Mahaprabhu expresses great remorse. See, imagine a dying patient. So weak, he could die at any moment. But due to the strong fever, he cannot eat. So Mahaprabhu gives us this picture. Krishna, you have been so merciful, so kind. You have reached to me and to this material world and given me the most powerful process. And you have not even given any rules and regulations how to apply this process. I can sing your holy name anywhere, any place, even in the bathroom, while I do my Pandavasena hair. And everything is possible. But I, on the other hand, am so unfortunate. It's like really the person who dies from a disease, and a wonderful meal is given to him, but he just can't take it. My dear devotees, let us be a little bit self-reflective. Oops, now comes an English word which may not be in an English dictionary. Let us be a little bit self-reflectory. It's a new word. Everyone makes new words, I can also do it. Let us think about ourselves. The holy name is sufficient. Nothing more is needed to come to the highest levels of love of Godhead. But we can't take it. We can't sit down and do our japa consistently for 2 hours with a concentrated mind. Mahaprabhu asked the question, why am I so unfortunate? And in one translation which Prabhupada gives, he says, due to aparad. Padma Purana says like this, one who just chants one single name of Krishna develops love of Godhead. One who only visits one time the holy dham and stays there overnight will be liberated from all sins. But why are we not experiencing this, please? I think you all are chanting, at least here on the Pandavasena trip, we also have many new people who chant, but we are yet to see you in the highest states of ecstasy. Why is it not happening? Padma Purana asked. And the answer is due to aparad, due to either consciously or unconsciously perform offenses. The result of the spiritual practice is not coming. You know, aparad is considered to be like fever. That someone is very hungry, he needs to eat, he is emaciated, he looks like a person just about to die, but still he cannot eat the sweet rice. Why not? Because there is high fever. So most of us conditioned souls, they have high fever. You can, the way you measure your fever is you go to the heart and see when it's a heart full with material desires. It's very difficult. Maharaji, you are also talking. Would you like to have the microphone? Or listen, it's very important for you. Fever. The fever of aparad comes into our spiritual life so that we cannot take the nourishment and we remain weak spiritually. We may remain not able to really take the full benefit out of this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expressed one type of remorse. Oh, I'm so full of offenses, I have no attachment to chanting. Although your chanting is the your kirtan is imbued or invested in power with so much energy. Now, in this verse, he addresses a second type of humility. A humility which arises directly from the soul, which is, you could say, innate. Do you understand the word innate? It means it's there, but it's in a dormant form. It has to be awakened. Like I was today sleeping, and His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj's bed, and I must have snored in an uncultured way like a lost Viking. I still was the same person. I had prepared a lecture. It was in a dormant state, this lecture. Now it is in a manifest state. So Bhakti Charu Maharaj very sweetly said, "Oh, wake up, wake up." And then I woke up and now I'm talking. Previously I was snoring, now I'm talking. Because the talking and the philosophy, which was dormant there, it was sleeping, it was with me, it is now coming out. So in Krishna consciousness, the soul has qualities, and one of these qualities is dānya, humility. It springs directly from the soul, and it is this type of humility which Mahaprabhu talks here about. He says, one should chant and think oneself lower than the straw in the street. You know, a devotee like this thinks the blade of grass in the street is low. Yes. But I am lower still. Because the grass can be put to use. It can do go-seva, cow service. And it can also cover the roof of a bhakta. And in this way keep the rain away from the soft body of the bhakta. But look at me, I have no use in service of Krishna's, those who are dear to Krishna, like the cows or the devotees. I have also no use in Krishna's service because I feel myself very wretched. This is one of the qualities. The second quality which is discussed here is what should be tolerant. Mahaprabhu said, tolerant like a tree. What does a tree do? It does not protest when it is felled, or if someone rips an apple, or in Italy an apricot from it. Nor does it request anyone for water. So a Vaishnava, when he is hurt, does not retaliate. In Spanish they say revenge. Revenge is a dish, a very sweet dish, which is best served cold. In other words, the offense is done, then you wait until the offender has forgotten, and then you get back on him. And then it's this cold, sweet dish. You know, it's not hot any longer. Like when there was this emotional turmoil. Hare Krishna. This is not our philosophy, it's the Spanish. So here we find a different picture. A Vaishnava, when hurt, does not retaliate, but remains compassionate like a tree. In other words, he remains a well-wisher even to those who have hurt him. I want to illustrate these two types of humilities now, that of feeling oneself wretched and that of being very tolerant, with the story of one great devotee called Ignat. Ignat was one of the Maharas brilliant saints who furthered Kirtan. He was himself a big influence in the Kirtan wave, which is in Maharashtra, Tukaram, and so on. You must have heard from your parents. So Ignat was one morning doing his puja to Lord Krishna, then a professional gambler passed by him on his way to his gambling friends. This gambler would gamble every day from morning till evening, 8 hours of gambling work, and he would earn money like this. So when he saw Eknath that morning doing his peaceful worship of Krishna, he decided, let me sit with Eknath and experience some of the peace which is there in his heart. Thus, he came 1 hour too late to his gambling session. His friends asked him, Hare, why are you late? I said to Eknath to experience some peace. Peace? He's a pretender like everyone else. Watch these saints, said one particular man. Watch these saints, they are all wolves in lamb bodies. No, Eknath is a real soul. Yeah, I was sitting and in his company I experienced real peace, said the gambler. Said the other person. Tomorrow I will make Eknath angry and you will see that he was only a pretender. So next morning came Eknath, took his bath in the river, and when he came fully washed with nice fresh clothes out of the river, he passed a house which was near the pathway. A house with a flat roof where that, let us call it the angry maker, where the angry maker said it should beetle. I think you know from your visits to Delhi about the power of beetle. They chew it and then they spit it, and then everywhere on the streets it leaves uncleanable strains. It's somehow such a strong red color, more than henna or anything, and you can't wash it out. Those who chew beetle very unconsciously, their shirts are all stained, and you can see in India, especially in Delhi, I've seen, and I've seen everywhere in India. It's, so this man was sitting on the, who wanted to prove Eknath a pretender, sat on the flat roof, chewing beetle. And then Eknath came, freshly washed, with a nice dress. He just spit a full mouthful on Eknath, and it came over his shirt, over his chadar, over his dhoti, and on his freshly washed body. In Germany, we say volle Ladung, full mouth. So Eknath looked at this. He looked up the roof and he saw the angry maker. And he looked back. And he went back to the river to take another bath. When he had finished his bath, he again had to pass that roof because there was only one pathway. And again the man repeated his offensive spitting. Eknath looked at the damage to his clothes, looked up to the roof to see the cause, and went back to take his bath. This repeated itself 32 times until this man had no, how do you call it? Saliva. I'm sorry. That's how it went. He was without. Then totally, after 32 times, you just can't produce anything anymore. So he passed. Why didn't you become angry on me? Why did you just tolerate it? And listen to the beautiful answer of Eknath. second reason is I saw you were so determined to act in your way that I learned from you to be determined to act in my way. I am a devotee, trying to be a devotee. I should act like a devotee, not become angry like a rickshaw baller. I don't think he said this at that time. You know, like a London taxi driver, maybe. And the third reason is I got the chance to take extra bath in the Holy River. Now, as we hear this, we think a nice story. I will write it down in my notebook, but I will never be able to act like this. If someone gets on my nerves, I let them know. I'm a Panda Vasena. For all of you who think like this, either acknowledged or unacknowledged, I request you to look for a moment on the first answer of Ignat, why he was tolerant. He said, when I become angry, I pollute myself, I pollute my heart. Why should I do this? In Psychology Today, it's a psychology paper in America, an interesting experiment appeared. It was about anger. They made a man angry for 1 minute, and then they asked him to breathe on a glass window. It's called condensate. Yes, the condensation of the breath was scraped off and fed to a guinea pig who instantaneously died because there was so much poison created by the anger of that man which came out in his breath. So then they made the same person, angry for 1 hour. I don't know, they needled him somehow. And then they asked him to get rid of his toxins by breathing in the same way. They could kill 80 guinea pigs. Modern science is not very compassionate, as you know. But the point here is important. Poison. Anger is a physical poison and a psychological poison, which comes to you and destroys your spiritual life. Tolerance, on the other hand, is an anti-poisoner. It makes the heart peaceful. Even if you only pretend to be humble and tolerant, you will spiritually heal and grow. It may, in the beginning, not be a humility which springs from the soul or the platform of Nishtha Bhakti. These are all high concepts for us. No, it is something which we see with our inquisitive mind as a necessary quality. Do you want to poison your life? By being reactory, by being angry, envious, and so on. No, humility brings the fever down, the fever of aggressiveness, the fever of apparat. Humility calms the heart. Tolerance calms the fever. And then you will be able to enjoy the meal of Krishna consciousness. If you remain hot inside your psychology with aggression, these qualities which are or retaliation or revenge, you will not be able to spiritually grow. You will remain a hot-headed neophyte in Krishna consciousness, to whom the presence of Krishna consciousness are withdrawn. Humility is and tolerance are very important qualities. And Mahaprabhu gives us a tip how we can realize these qualities. We can just think these everyone is a dwelling place of Krishna. Therefore, we treat everyone nicely in a humble and tolerant way, giving respect to others without demanding respect. Now, my dear devotees, I want to be very practical. The organizers of Pandava Sena have told me before, talk practically. These people are from London. And I would like to just end my lecture here with a few practical tips on humility and tolerance. How you can relate to these qualities and develop them. First of all, my dear devotees, and Prabhupada always used to stress this in every lecture, you have to understand that you are not the body, but you are an eternal soul. As long as you remain identified with the body and the mind, you will take any slight little, let me say, what is the opposite to praise? What?
Criticism.
Criticism, yeah. So deeply to your, oh. He said, my breath smells like a fisher village from Orissa. Because you are identified with the body, and this was too much for you to tolerate. Madhvacharya says, a person who is bodily identified, who is identified with the body, suffers from constant tiredness and unquenchable sexual desires. I have heard young people from London have such desires. Not Pandava Senas. The identification with the physical body brings you to a type of drowsiness and so many desires that you don't have any mental peace left to you. And when you come into a situation where you are challenged because you are so tense and you have no mental peace due to this constant endeavor to uphold a facade of yourself, a masquerade that I'm a boy, I should look well, and I have my rights, and my... Then all your mental peace and serenity is burned to ashes, and a little thing, you know, just drives you crazy. I saw this today in the airplane. Next to me was a very nicely calmed German man, you know, with a very German frisula. How do you say this? Hair styling. He was very brown from the Browning studio. Equal brownness, you know, the same brown color on the finger as it is on the forehead. Equal dosage. And he was next to an equally brown German lady. I just happened to pack my things in a not so expert way in the overhead locker, and immediately, you know, I stepped on his toe, and he was immediately going into karate position. I said, "Sorry, you're not the body." Bodily identification just burns all your metal piece to ashes. This nervous German showed it to us. Or when you identify, Madhvacharya continues, when you identify with your mind, you know, your emotions, you suffer from pain, from panic, a little slightly panic, paranoid, you suffer from fear, and you suffer from so many desires when you identify with your mind, which ultimately ends in disappointment. You know, people who identify with their thought processes and their emotions often suffer from disappointment in life because life doesn't do them the favor to act according to their plans. And those who are very intelligent and identify with their material intelligence, they suffer from existential bitterness and frustration. Maharaj and myself were talking about people who criticize, make very intelligent observations and criticize, but are so bitter and so frustrated. So when you identify with the body and the mind, you lose your mental peace. This is the essence. And if you want to practice humility, and tolerance, which means you have to be a little peaceful inside to be tolerant, then you cannot be identified with the body and the mind. You should give this give up this identification. And I want to give you a little exercise which you can do as you go through life. You can start your day the way we teach it in our sacred space seminars. Start your day with an understanding, I'm an eternal soul. Krishna is my master. Then you do the second step in your life from that position of the eternal soul. Does it really matter so much how your hair is styled? What so-and-so said to you? How you're looked upon by others. When you identify not with the body and the mind, but with the eternal, your eternal identity, you can tolerate and you can be humble because you have ascended to the spiritual platform from where tolerance and humility and giving respect is possible. A person who remains totally an illusion, thinking the body to be the self, can never be a humble person. And if he tries to pretend to be humble, if there is a slight provocation, he, as we say in slang in his common English, he flips out. Do you understand this English? You must come on the plane where you are a little unmovable, where you are unshakable, you're spiritually secure, but when you don't identify with the body and the ever-changing processes in the mind. I would like to, because we have many Matajis here and many young men who have very, 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 very deep emotions. I want to suggest to you in your life another thing, the emotional traffic light. When you drive in your car on a road, you often see a red light, in London also, it means stop. Then you see the yellow light, it means get ready, and you see the green light. Go drive. So in Hare Krishna, people, Emotional traffic light is also important for you. I will tell you afterwards. often we find ourselves victims to things like anger, things like feeling hurt, emotions like why am I not appreciated, and so on. When these things come, first go on red, stop here. Then go on yellow. Let me think about this before I act. And you will find out that these emotions are passing emotions. They're not all that important. You shouldn't act upon them. It's like you begin to think, how can I act in a mature way? And then you have found out how to act in a more Krishna conscious way and not in such an impulsive way. Oh, you can go on green. Go with your Krishna conscious path. So I would really request all of you to make a practice out of this verse. Try to develop humility. Try to develop tolerance. And this is easily possible by these two simple practices of, first of all, understanding who you are in relationship to Krishna, an eternal soul, and then using a little bit this, when you see yourself acting on the material level, on the emotional level, on an outburst of anger, outburst of intolerance, you know, and all these things, then stop yourself. Go on red for a moment, and then on yellow. Think deeply how to get ready, what would be a better way to act, and then only go on green and drive on the road back home, back to Godhead. Is that all? In concluding, I would like to say the perfect example in Gaudiya Vaishnavism for humility is Shukla Bala, who was a very poor brahmachari who obtained all his food by madhukari, by begging. I don't know if you have ever eaten only that what you have begged. No? In Germany, when we were young and old, at Sankirtan, we were known as the Sankirtan Lions, the Nishinga Bhaktas. And I remember we had for 1 year, our Sankirtan party had the rule we would only live by things which we begged. Because we felt we were arrogant Germans from a bad background. And for 1 year, even I lived for begging. It is in the evening after Sankirtan, we begged, we were hungry, you know, with a huge fire of digestion like young people have. We were knocking at the doors of people and said, we are hungry. Can you please give us something to eat? They said, come in! And they opened the refrigerator, and then when we saw what was inside, we fainted. Okay, you cannot take anything, this Lord. Are you non-veg? We were all non-veg, you know. So it was an endeavor to beg our stomachs full. We begged for the evening and for the following day what we needed to eat. It makes you very humble. It makes you, when you're very hungry and you need something to eat, please be merciful to something. Maybe, don't you have an apple, a normal apple, or a cucumber? It was a very good character training, especially for myself, who come from a different family background, where it was given to him in his young formative years. So Shukla Bala was a poor brahmachari who obtained all his food by begging. One day, he passed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who sat there near the Ganga in a state of deep absorption in Krishna. Shukla Bala was a very humble soul. He lived as a brahmachari and he had a little self-made cottage on the banks of the Ganga. And as he passed Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he sang a song. Jai Krishna Gopal, Govinda Manamali. He sang this again and again. And the Lord heard him. He got up from his trance. He looked at Shukla Bala and said, Shukla Bala, do you have something to eat? Shukla Bala had all his, what he begged, in a little bag that she carried on his back. And he threw. I mean, this is not fit for the Lord to be eaten, but the Lord just went with his hand in his bag and took the rice that is parboiled, not sun-dried rice, you know, it was partially boiled, it was really not a fit food. And he ate that. And Shukla Bala expressed, no, you are the Lord! The Vedas describe that one should offer you only pure food, with pure mantras, and a bell and all of this, and you are now ruining my life by taking from me this impure food. Now I will go to hell. The Gauranga Mahaprabhu said, my dear devotee, I don't care so much for all these Vedic rules. I only care if something is offered with love for me. All the preparations nicely prepared, they are not valuable for me as when a simple, humble devotee offers me from his heart something. So I am very pleased with you. And tomorrow I will come to your house and eat at your house. It is said that Mahaprabhu came the other day, Goddess Lakshmi cooked in the kitchen of Shukla Bala Brahmachari. My dear devotees, what does this tell us? No, then Shukla Bala asked him, my lord, he asked him, you kindly give me some instruction. What should I do to please you? Please, you tell me your divine instruction. Then the Lord repeated, please, all together.
Trinadapi sinichena taro avari sahishnuna amanina amanarena hirdaniya sadavari.
One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of force or esteem. And one should be ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. You will have taste. You will like to chant. You will be able to eat the meal, the delicious meal of Krishna consciousness, because humility and tolerance has brought the fever down. The fever of aparad. No? This is a very powerful instruction. Our Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, oh, everyone listen to me. I stretch out my arms and I say for emphasis, take this verse and string it on a string and carry it around your neck for constant remembrance. When you can remember this word in the different challenging situations in life, you will be saved from the materialistic way of life, and you will retain your spiritual purity. So, Hare Krishna, I have come to the end. I hope you got something out of it. Remember your practical exercises. This is very easy in the Pandavasena getaway. Then you are with 50 others in the same bathroom. You can learn tolerance, no? Shower is not there, water is in little, is in high demand and little supply. Tolerance, and when you are somewhat slighted, you can remain humble and remain a servant, and then your Krishna consciousness will blossom. You will be ecstatic like Bhakti Charu Maharaj. So now my older brother will correct me.
When I eat something very delicious, then I want the taste to remain in my mouth. And I don't want to eat anything after that, just in order to relish the taste to continue. So Satchidananda Maharaj gave such a relishable class that I don't want to spoil it. So let us relish it to the fullest extent, and let us invite questions. If anybody has any question, you can ask Satchidananda Maharaj.
You should ask Bhakti Charu Maharaj.
It's decadent to humble and have community with devotees, but what about when you're out there in the workplace, and if you're managing a team or something like that, then how do you sort of remain humble and have that humility when, say, the people that are in your team who are actually reporting to you are not so?
Question.
When people at our workplace irritate us and evoke the verses in us, we should use that emotional traffic light red. Stop. What's going on? Before I take out a knife and become Jack the Ripper, I should think what is the better reaction here. Will it serve you to become angry? Will it, ask yourself, will it be good if you become irritated? Will it help the situation if you tell the person the verses, vocabulary you've heard in the harbor, the docks of London? Will it change anything to the positive? And you will quickly find the answer, no. If you allow yourself now to be irritated and say bad things and end up in a fist fight in your office, that will not help you, nor will it help the situation. So, but when something irritates us, irritates me, and I also have a temperament like anything. I remember what Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, a god brother, once told me when I was very, very irritated with someone's behavior towards me. And I asked him, how do you remain calm in such circumstances? And he said, when nothing else works, I see the person's activity as data, pure data. You know, imagine, do you use a computer sometimes. You know, sometimes it may happen that in the computer you press a certain button and then the program starts and comes up and you really didn't want it. Now, there are two ways to act like this. You could take your computer and throw it out of the window, totally angry, or you could say this is just the way it's programmed, the machine, and tolerate. So when something happens at your working place, you can know this is how this person is programmed. Most probably his wife, you know, poured a bucket with frogs over him to wake him up, you know, and he had a bad start in the morning, he is now full of revengeful feelings, and I'm the first guy he meets, so he ventilates his anger against me. You know, you see him as data. He can't act in a different way. He's a fully controlled soul, controlled by the modes of material nature, if you want to be philosophical. He can't act in a different way. He's like a computer. I pressed the button and something came up which is less desirable. You know, why now act in an immature way? And if something gets really bad, it's all right to show your hood, you know, to stop it in some ways without causing any hurt. I mean, if someone attacks you, you can just, you know, it's all right to stop him and sit him down, you know, and so on and so forth. That's all right, but not to act in a hurtful way, because you hurt yourself the most when you do it, and it's not pleasing to Krishna.
Thank you very much. How should we react? How do we react when someone acts badly towards a devotee friend or a member of your family, and you have that role of protector? How do we balance of protecting versus, like, what is the limit of that? Because we don't want to become aggressive unnecessarily.
Well, it has been described that anger can be used towards offenders of the devotees. It's true that we should not be angry generally, but when it is directed to a devotee, when somebody is insulting or harming or hurting a devotee, then we should not remain humble. Then we should protest, take action. So, Kama, Krishna, Paramarthane, lust can be used while rendering service to Krishna. The passion, lust, can be utilized towards serving Krishna. Krodh, anger, can be utilized towards those who are offensive to the devotee. So those, when we see that somebody is offending Krishna and his devotee, then no, we are not fit under this condition. Then we are the followers of Lord Vishnu. But at the same time, as Madan pointed out, that this consideration is important. Red light, yellow light, green light. Don't react immediately. Stop and think about the consequences. Like, if the consequences are going to be harmful, if the consequences are going to be detrimental, then use your intelligence and take your action accordingly.
So in that instance, when we're talking about anger being poisonous, is it still poisonous and you just don't care? Or is it that it's allowable anger?
Well, anger will be, will act like poison when you are being affected by that yourself. As Maharaj used the expression, show your hood, but don't bite. Show your hood, I mean, just, you are not really affected by that emotion yourself. But just to kind of prevent that person from committing that, you take your stand. Any other question?
In that situation, what if the person that offended the devotee is a devotee themselves? What would we do in that situation?
Well, when we're dealing with devotees, and yes, sometimes the devotees also act in an inappropriate way. They try to advise him, try to tell him that that's not right. And if he is not going to listen to just your words, then go to him in a group and make him, give him the kind of good advice that Prabhu, that's not right. You can't behave like this. Because we do have the responsibility to correct each other. Not that because everyone has joined ISKCON, everyone is a perfect devotee. We have to understand that we are actually practicing to become perfect. So in our perfection, while trying to become perfect, we do need the help and guidance of others. So when somebody acts in an inappropriate way, yes, in a polite way, in a nice way, in a humble way, try to correct.
Just explain that Krishna likes a devotee who is meek and humble. So this, the understanding of meek, if you could comment on that, because sometimes two different personalities can be humble, but one's nature is not externally, it doesn't appear as meek. Another one who is softer spoken can appear meek. And we've had leaders of the movement who are both advanced devotees, but one is very externally seen very soft and spoken, and the other one is a very staunch leader. So can you just comment on internal versus external weakness?
I think your question points to the direction of how real is someone, or authentic humility. And this is a general issue or general theme. How real is someone, how real is his humility, how real is his bhakti, how real is his realization, and so on. We are told in Krishna consciousness that ultimately the whole process of Krishna consciousness aims at purifying the heart. That's it has to take place here. It doesn't have to. Krishna consciousness doesn't take place in the hairdress or in the dhoti style, or you know how well you put your tilak on. It is really something which has to come from the heart. And here, every one of us is asked to really purify the heart from the inner darkness of false ego, attachment, and so on. A devotee has to really ask himself, do I want to become free from false ego? Because it is only out of false ego that I'm angry and prideful and intolerant and wanting respect, you know. You have a devotee who acts out of false ego. He can dress himself up and have tremendous responsibilities, but all his activities will be tainted by that false ego. And the devotee who has an internal sense of a genuine humility, who really wishes to serve the people, his outward actions may be wrong, maybe different, you know, may spell something different. There's a very nice example in Chaitanya Lila where one Mahapurusha, a great person, it says, appears to Jagannath Mishra and says, you are chastising your son, Gauranga Mahaprabhu? Don't you know that he is God? But you are chastising him, you're telling him, don't do this, don't do that, and don't sprinkle water on the brahmanas, and so on. Are you not afraid? And Jagannath Mishra says, he may be what he wants, what he is, but I'm his father, I have to serve him. So therefore his chastisement was Gauranga Mahaprabhu was pleasing to the Lord, although it looked like dominating. Another example is Govinda. Govinda used to massage the feet of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, the calves, after each noon meal. Mahaprabhu would eat his meal, then he would lie down, and then Govinda would come and massage his calves, because in the afternoon, every afternoon, Gauranga Mahaprabhu would dance for hours, circumambulating around the Jagannath temple, and he needed good functioning calves. They're called calves, this part of the body. So one day, after the meal, Gauranga Mahaprabhu lay down in such a way that his body was, you know, lying in such a way that Gauranga Mahaprabhu could not enter the room and find his way to his calves. You know, imagine the door is here, Mahaprabhu was lying, he was tall, more tall than 2 meters, and Govinda couldn't come from outside, inside, because Mahaprabhu were lying like this and his calves were there. So Govinda said, my Lord, please move slightly, a little away. I need to come in. Oh, said, I've already taken my meal. I'm very tired. I can't move. You do what you want. Then Govinda took his chadar, put it over the body of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and stepped over it, over the body of the Lord, over the chatter, and then did his massage. And Mahaprabhu was happily dreaming of Radha Krishna and falling asleep. After the rest was over, Mahaprabhu woke up and he looked in the room, and there in the corner of the room sat Govinda. Oh, Govinda, you usually take your prasada after you have done your massage service, but now you have sat already and waited while I was resting. Oh, Govinda, said Govinda, I couldn't cross your body. You were lying in the doorway. How could I come over the body? Mahaprabhu said, but you crossed already to get in the room. So why not cross again to get out of the room? Yeah, but this one time I crossed for your service. To cross back, I would have done for my belly. My belly.
that I know how to. So this gives you a little bit the idea of internal humility or internal Krishna consciousness. Outwardly, we may say, but he crossed the body of the Lord. This is not very humble. This is not very etiquette-like. But he did it in service. So a person who's genuinely humble, he will always orient or inform all his actions from the platform of what is favorable for devotional service. And a person who is not genuinely humble, he is very pretending. He's very nice, but when you get a little on his nerves, just a little, he explodes. Because he is not on the service mood, he is on serving himself mood. Humbleness is good because it is when everyone thinks you're advanced. Did you see? Serves you in our society more than being arrogant. But you should do it for the Krishna, not for yourself. Like Govinda. This is for Bhakti
Charukaraj. 9 o'clock.
Oh. Oh. But he is saying we should end.
Yeah.
Oh.
We have one more question.
Krishna Maharaj. I was wondering, how do we increase our recognition and appreciation for how Krishna is arranging things for our lives, how he's helping us? How do we develop, how do we become more and more grateful and more thankful for Krishna's arrangements in our lives?
No, you're much more. I don't know anything.
I've been answering for all years.
But I have starved for 7 long years. I have not heard from you. How to increase the gratefulness?
You see, ultimately it's a matter of appreciation. And this appreciation comes from, genuine appreciation comes from not being envious. Like, on the other hand, you can say envy is something that blinds us about appreciating others' greatness. When the heart becomes purified, when the heart becomes devoid of envy, then we begin to see things the way they are. Especially in the world of Vaishnavas, the Vaishnavas will display all kinds of wonderful qualities. The Vaishnavas will achieve all kinds of wonderful things for Krishna. And when we begin to see that and develop genuine appreciation, then only will naturally the sense of gratitude will develop. So the point is, as the heart becomes cleansed, and the cleanliness of heart is synonymous to freedom from envy. So when the heart becomes free from envy, then only will be able to appreciate the greatness of the Lord and His devotees. And then we will see how the Lord is acting through His devotees. Devotees are achieving wonderful things, but it is actually the Lord is making them achieve in such a way for Him. And then automatically we will develop this sense of that. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
the class and the answers to the next question. So if we could have three loud prayer words for this wonderful class.
Thursday morning.
Thursday.
Currently what we have planned is for Charan Maharaj to give the morning class, because Sachinanda Maharaj has travelled, so we thought he might want to know to settle in. And Sachinanda Maharaj to give the evening class. And we weren't sure what time you were leaving on Thursday, if you would be here for the class time.
My flight is at 2:30.
Oh, so you're here for...
So I can leave around 11:30.
How are you finding the joint?